this development, and we'll be giving a presentation up on the screen, Nick, shortly. The meeting is going to be recorded, audio, just for your information. After the presentation by Mira and their representatives, there'll be an opportunity to take questions from the floor. Questions will be strictly through microphone only, so just so that everyone can hear. So please, if you've got a question when we get to that section, we'll circulate the microphones for you to ask questions or make comments or make points. I'd encourage everyone to sort of have an open and respectful dialogue with on the subject that's under discussion this evening, so that we will get the most from the meeting. So in saying that, I'd like to thank Miller and the representatives for coming along this evening, and I'll hand the microphone over to Nick.
Thank you everyone for coming, as Alan has said. For the presentation, it's probably only going to be 10-15 minutes in order to give you a bit of an idea of the development. As Alan has said, there'll be questions at the end. Ask that people leave questions and comments to the end of the meeting, please. We'll cover a couple of things, highways and drainage, as well as the design of the proposals. And then welcome people's questions for sort of 40 minutes or so at the end. And we go from there. So, my name's Nick Burnton. I work for SLR Consulting. I'm a principal planner and planning consultant for Miller Homes. To my left.
Good evening, everybody. My name's Adrian Robson on behalf of Miller Homes. Just a bit about Miller Homes. It's a privately owned house builder, national house builder, with a 5-star reputation, official rating. I want to, before we start, actually just want to, Alan kindly thanked us, but actually wanted to thank all of you for taking your time out of your evening on a Friday evening, on what I hope will be an extremely constructive evening, and I look forward to hearing all of your feedback, which, you know, we are early on in the process at the moment, and it's your opportunity to obviously feed into the proposal at this stage, and we can take those on board, hopefully come back with some positive responses.
Good evening, I'm Neil Marshall from iTransport. We're the transport consultancy firm appointed by Miller to look at the scheme.
Hi, Tim Woods from TS Wood Consulting. I'm helping with the flood risk and drainage element.
Thank you all. Just to highlight that it's not just us on the project team. Obviously not everyone in the project team is here tonight, but there's a wide range of consultants Miller appointed, covering things like architecture, obviously, landscape architects, heritage and archaeology, ecologists, specialists in air quality and lighting, and also on trees, to make sure that we've covered and considered all of the main issues, technical issues, as we develop our proposals for the site. So I'm sure you know far better than we do where the site is and what the local area is like. I just wanted to highlight some of the key points. So hopefully you can see on the screen. You can see, obviously, that's where the pub and post office is in here. You've got a bridle way runs up here, which is known as Smuggler's Lane, and then a bridle way runs down here, and then footpath, I think, is off the top. And you can get down to here, and this is where, obviously, the proposed development is. I'm sure you're all probably very familiar with it. Just going to briefly run through some of the key constraints and considerations that we've been thinking about as we've developed proposals for the site. So again, you're familiar with the field, I'm sure you are. It obviously slopes up to the northwest corner. We are aware that there's surface water drainage issues, and Tim will talk a little bit more to that and some of our work that we've been doing to consider that. As we developed our proposals in a minute. We also know that this up here is designated extension woodland, so we've been considering that carefully as we developed our proposals. And we're obviously also aware of the listed buildings to the frontage as well, and try to be respectful of that as we've developed our proposals as well. One of the first things as we were sort of developing the plans for the site, and once we started to look at constraints, to think about the vision for the site, and as you put on the slide, we want to create a place that's sensitive to the village. We know how much you'll love the place, and particularly enjoy the benefits that things like the shop and the pub deliver to the village, and we really want to protect that, and that's been key to us. We've been developing our proposals, and hopefully you'll start to see that as we talk through in more detail. The proposals at the moment are for about 65 homes, that include 35% affordable homes. That's a requirement of the district council, and that'd be a mix of shared ownership and social rented affordable, be highly sustainable development. We're prioritising pedestrian and cycling from the site, and one of the key things that you'll see in a minute in terms of our draft proposals is providing a village green space to the front of the site to complement the existing pub and shop that obviously the site fronted. So as I've mentioned, the proposals are for about 65 new homes. That is still subject to change as we finalise our proposals. This is a draft plan at the moment, so it might change from what we ultimately submit. We've included a large amount of open space at the site frontage, so that the development is set back from the road and also set back from the more sensitive listed buildings. The access, which Neil will talk about in a bit more detail in a minute, is set at the centre, just to the south of where the shop is. And then you can see you've got this area of open space at the front, and then the housing set around a number of different roads. A central, it's all two-storey in height, and then in the centre is some flatted development apartments that's still at two-storey in height. One of the key things that we're really conscious of is respecting the local environment and the local character. The proposals retain a 15-metre buffer to the ancient woodland. We've also, as I've mentioned already, including a village green frontage, and we've been trying to design the homes so they are in keeping the local area and the local aesthetic, and our architect has done a lot of work looking at the local character and designing the properties so they try and adhere to that, whilst also making efficient use of the land as well to provide as many homes as possible whilst being respectful of the site and the surroundings. One of the key requirements of the site is to provide 10% biodiversity net gain so that the site will have a better, higher ecological value after the development than it, as it currently is as an arable field. These are just some indicative examples of the street scenes for the frontage and other parts of the site. These are still sort of being developed, but again, you've got a mixture of different materials there, and tile hanging, brick, and some weatherboarding as well.
Just gives you a flavour though, so obviously our architect reviews the local vernacular in the site context, and we brought SP on board because they also were involved in the scheme just up the road for Barclay Developments, so they're familiar with the surrounding area, and we wanted to be able to have somebody on board who was familiar in that regard in terms of design, because that's extremely important.
I'm going to pass over to Neil to talk a little bit about the site access and transport considerations. Neil, if that's okay?
Yep. So the site access, as Mick has just highlighted, is out onto Chapel Road. We are acutely aware of how popular the local shop and post office is and the pub. The site is located such that we do not interfere with that. The road will be widened past Chapel Road. The road will be widened past Chapel Road to enable cars to continue to pass by it. We're not interfering with the parking at all outside the shop. How it happens at the moment in an informal way can continue to happen in an informal way. So the road is being widened by land being taken from the site. So if you currently stop off quickly outside the shop to pop in and pop out, you can continue to do so. There won't be any impact in terms of that side to it. And as part of that as well, we are improving or providing footways on the western side of Chapel Road past the site as well, with new crossing facilities to enable people to get out not just to and from this site, but also to and from Smugglers Way, Bridle Way, safe crossing across Chapel Road, where there's currently cars which you know parked up. We are looking at putting in sort of traffic build-out or vehicle build-out so pedestrians can stand beyond the parked cars and have clear visibility, can see traffic coming to and from, and likewise drivers can see where they're going. So it's an improvement in safety for the existing community to use those Smugglers Way access, Smugglers Way access to get out and enjoy the rest of the countryside. We have spoken to West Sussex Centre Council's highway team. These plans are undergoing an independent safety audit at the moment as well. It has gone through West Sussex's team. They've given a preliminary sign-off to it, subject to the independent review. So it is West Sussex's highway. We can only do so much as they will allow us to do. But based on the surveys undertaken on site and our consultation with the authority, this is considered the best way of enabling safe access to and from the site whilst ensuring that the existing community facilities are retained and enhanced.
I'm going to hand over to Tim to talk a little bit about how we can consider this particular surface water at risk of on the site.
Could you possibly project your voices a little more? It's quite difficult near the back here to hear all your words.
At least it's not working.
Yeah. Just project your voices.
Okay, I'll try and be a... Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, so in terms of flood risk, I've seen a lot of the comments you passed on to the parish about the existing flooding down Chapel Road. And ultimately, this is surface water running off the higher land, which has nowhere to drain to, because there was a watercourse there originally, probably back in the 1950s, 1960s, where it was culverted. And that's what leads to most of the flooding issues along Chapel Road. So as part of the works and the discussion with the Lead Local Flood Authority of West Sussex, we're going to be opening up that culvert through the site to put it back to its normal water course rather than through a culvert, which gives it more capacity and will take the water off Chapel Road and into the site and let it drain away down towards Lumpengill, towards the south, where it currently goes. In terms of the drainage for the site itself, rainwater harvesting is being proposed as a lead name for all of the properties in Horsham to deal with the water neutrality issue. So that will help store a lot of the rainfall that comes onto the site. We use for flushing toilets, washing clothes. And other than that, a full subsystem, so storing all the water that comes off the site, it will be restricted to a very low rate before it's discharged into the water course, which again helps to reduce flooding further downstream. So in discussions with the Lead Local Flood Authority at the moment, and we will continue to discuss with them until they're happy with what we're proposing.
Thank you, Tim. Just worth saying that the uncultivated water course isn't yet shown on the plans, but that's something that will
Not at the moment, there are plans that can show it and they will be.
Some of the work we've been doing on the flood risk has been developing since the draft proposals. I can't see that yet. That will be form part of our proposals. So, sort of really to just recap, obviously, the proposals provide new homes, about 65 new homes. There's a pressing need for homes in the area.
When you want £1 million for a four bedroom house with no garden, that's an issue, and when a two-bedroom property is more than my three-bedroom house with a garden and driveway, and they have no gardens and driveways, that there is an issue. I'm aware that affordable housing is only meant to be a certain percentage below some of the highest prices on the site, so affordable housing is a misconception. Please say for us exactly what affordable housing is.
The affordable housing ratio in England, as you partly recognise, is housing is not affordable in this country. It's about 7.7 times average income in England in order to buy a house, and it's even more in Horsham. And that's why there's a need for new housing across Horsham and across the country as well. The proposals are to do about 35% affordable housing.
You are skirting around my question very
nicely. So there'll be two 10-year types. So you have your market housing, obviously.
Yeah.
which will make up the other 65%. We'll have a tenure, for example, 30% of the affordable housing, which are... No, 30% of the 35%. So you have different schemes, such as the shared ownership.
How much she wants to know?
How much of a price?
Price.
Yeah. What are your price ranges? Because we already know the price ranges for there. I work within the ecology and the construction industry. I already know what the gist of income out of it is pandering.
So in terms of the affordable housing element, there's two tenures. One being shared ownership, noting that there is obviously high market prices. It enables people to get onto the property ladder by purchasing a share. And that is through a housing association.
Numbers, mate! How much are they going to cost?
It's pointless us having this discussion.
It's the market.
But there's
we don't set the prices for housing.
You must know your building and you've worked all these figures out. Come on.
What's your regulations set?
Are you competent?
The regulations set what the affordable housing will be sold at. And that will be saying that the housing associations will set and take on the affordable housing.
The other element is an ownership model. It is an affordable rented model. So they don't own the house. They rent the property from the housing association at a lower rate than the market, and that is capped within the Section 106 agreement. Therefore, that offers the other alternative of not being necessarily driven by the market. It is set by the housing associations and nationally.
Are you aware that a lot of these social housing agencies wouldn't take on some lines in some sort of...
There have been challenges nationally in terms of grant funding. This section that has changed recently in terms of some of the grant funding has more grant funding has been released to allow the affordable housing providers to take on those affordable homes more. So
hopefully, I also think it's a good point though. I think we're fortunate in that we are a national house builder, so I can't speak obviously for the house builders who deliver the scheme just down the road. But we deliver across the country, so we have those relationships with the housing associations, which make it more viable across the board, if that makes sense, so that there's more affordable housing being provided, which makes it more palatable and viable for them to be provided.
So do you have a housing association partner in situ or in discussion?
We're in discussions, yeah, with housing associations. We can't reveal right now because obviously contractual sensitivity, but we are. And it's not just one, it's several.
Are they local housing associations though,
and
not like based in London? Or
no, somewhere? So they're on the local registered list approved by Horsham District Council. Yeah, and also when you have the affordable housing, they're not given to people. For example, just in London, local people are genuinely prioritised as well. Yeah. So there's like a cascade mechanism for.
Your head offices were.
Our head office is in Scotland. However, we are a national...
Edinburgh.
Yes, that is correct, but, we have regions. And we deliver schemes all across the country. I don't live in Scotland.
Go
and develop Ireland. Can we get to the end of the presentation and then we will take questions in a structured manner at the end of the presentation? So, in addition to the new homes, we've got the Village Green Frontage we've been talking about, so that's the new open space at the front of the site to keep an open area in front of the pub and the shop. As Tim has talked to, we're hoping to improve the surface water drainage situation so that not only does the site cover its own back Can you let us finish, please?
Every single year, at least twice.
Yeah, and by diverting the water course through the site and lowering the water level, you automatically bring the water level down to lower than the post office floor level, so the water will bypass the post office. Into the site where it will be stored, and then back up to the Bunker Hill, which is the main water.
Sorry, into what site?
Can we continue and then we'll take structured questions at the end rather than shouting out, which isn't fair on people, not everyone who might want to speak. So as Neil has talked to, we're looking at providing the new access from Chapel Road, providing traffic coming through the build-outs that Neil has talked about, and also facilitating continued parking in front of the shop. There'll also be financial contributions arising from the development to Horsham District Council through the civil scheme of community infrastructure levy, which is a mandatory payment that Miller Homes have to pay as the development has started. And obviously, you know, as we've been highlighting throughout, we are really keen to make sure that the proposals are successful part of the new development, as you know, the historic developments in Barnsley often have been, like the scheme that Hayden mentioned to the north east of the site, and obviously historically the development has happened within Barnsley, like at the Hortons. I'm just going to touch on what's happening next, where we go from here. So obviously we're still drafting our proposals, developing our proposals. We're obviously here to hear your feedback, hear the parish council's feedback. We're also in discussions with the district council and also the highways authority and local flood authority about proposals. Over the next sort of month or two, we'll be finalising our designs and layout, and we expect to then submit a planning application to Horsham District Council in September of this year. At that point, the plans, all our reports, all of the supporting information that we've gathered will be available for people to comment on as part of the wider planning application, and then a decision we expect within November, December of this year from the District Council. And obviously, if we're successful in getting planning permission, we look to be constructing, or Miller Homes will be looking to construct the development in 2026, 2027. So that concludes the main part of the presentation.
I think just also, just in terms of... In terms of construction periods, it's likely to be around about 18 months to 2 years maximum. I'd say probably the former, be around about 18 months max, so if you understand the construction period, if we were to be granted planning permission.
So just before I open it up, just a couple of housekeeping in terms of making sure everyone gets an opportunity. I think if we can try and stick to sort of one question per person, I think we're looking probably at about 40, maximum 40 minutes for some questions. Just hopefully plenty of time to get a range of views across. I think there's microphones, is there?
I'd encourage folks to use mic, so I'll roam around with the mic, and if you can stick your hands up to ask a question, then and if we can go around with the
side. Can I start? I have actually got a number of questions.
Yeah, okay. Can we just keep it structured and keep it to the person with the microphone?
So your opening picture was of the site, saying the air view of the local area. The picture's 5-6 years old, so that's wrong straight away because it doesn't show someone's fault. I'm the owner of the Queen's Head. I've got a marquee outside in that picture. That's pre-COVID and during COVID. So on your, is this one before that, I believe? No, that one. So you can't see any of Summer's Pond. The stuff you sent me in the post of the area, that's wrong. Yeah, so at least have the decency to do an up-to-date aerial photograph.
I think the Google Maps only recently updated it, though, so we will update that. You'll see that with the new screen.
I've got a couple of questions, and I've got to get these out. You're putting bollards outside my pub, so what? I'm not going to get a tray delivery anymore for your control bit? Obviously, it's smugglers.
Should we do one question at a time, then we can...
Why?
How do you prefer to...
Who's the parking lot?
That'll be me.
Right, so then I'm all...
First?
Yeah. Bollards outside the pub, you said, yes?
The view at the moment is to maintain the safety for people to cross the road, looking at a slight build-out, not outside the pub, to the south of the pub. So it's not across your access at all.
So that's not the footpath?
No,
it's outside the shop, so there's shops not going to get delivered.
So we can bring that plan up again. So if you, there's basically no change. There's a small build out over a distance of about a metre. The rest of that row stays.
So the Arctic lorries can still park up there, so the pub can get a delivery, the shop can deliver. Next one, your green space at the front. What are you doing around the green space so as soon as you guys are gone, we're not full of caravans? Fencing, bollards, are we going to be inundated with nice travellers? Let's be honest about this.
Firstly, with the opening up of the culvert, the frontage of the site will have the opened up ditch, so that will prevent people being able to access from Chapel Road. Then along the access road itself, there'll be probably a
low-key mill rail fencing.
So there's 100% walking sort of there.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
It's in our interest to protect that open space for people to use, because ultimately, you know, it's likely to be managed by a management company that the residents of the new site will be interested in. So their mill at home have as much interest in keeping that as a defended space, so to speak.
And you said 2 years for your building?
18 months to 2 years.
Okay, so where the pub's suffering from trade, what compensation are you paying when you overrun? A Somers Pond was 1 year, and we're, 3-4 years in there?
Yeah.
So are we looking at compensation for the businesses you're going to mess up? Yes, no?
What we will do, we'll have a construction environmental management plan. We'll work with his direct opposite neighbour to minimise disruption as much as possible. What we intend to do is obviously keep.
So there will be disruptions, so it's minimise disruption. I'll leave you at this point and the next one. The Needle House is in Barnes Green. There are more houses, forget Somers Pond alone, where they sold 6 houses out of 34. There's more houses available in Barnes Green at this moment, around the rest of the village, than any point in the last 100 years. So, the need of housing in Barnes Green, when we have more houses than what we need, why? This is too much money, because we don't need the houses.
I disagree.
The only way that...
You disagree? So what about the houses that can't be sold in Barnes Green?
The only way that Miller Homes will make money is by selling the houses. They're not going to build the houses if they can't sell them.
And that's the key with creating a really nice environment, because then the better the site... The better the site, then... the more people want to actually live there. And that's why we're going to be creating this really special, what we feel anyway, is a really special place to live.
Should we take a question
from outside the chat? Hello, it's Gordon. Is it all?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Assuming this goes ahead, which it may well do, for me and my family, one of our concerns is that how the village is currently aesthetically will change. So you said that it's going to be widening down Chapel Road and that you're looking at putting a new pedestrian crossing in to be able to use the footpath that runs opposite the pub. My concern is going to be that those new additions will not be in keeping with how the village is at the moment. So part of the appeal when you move to Barnes Green, for a lot of us, has been the fact that we don't have a lot of street lighting, that you have to wander around with your mobile to get signal, and that the pavements are a little bit worn. And we all understand that change has to happen, but that is the attractiveness as you come down the hill into the village, that it still has that village feel. So, if the proposal goes ahead and you build the new houses and you say they're going to be in keeping with the village style, how are you going to ensure that the road widening and the pedestrian crossing is also going to be in keeping with the current style of the village and not a new ugly Lego add-on? Thank you.
No, they're really fair points, and I think that's one of the things we've been really conscious of, is obviously for Miller Homes, and maybe add to this, is one of the attractions of providing new homes here, is because it is such an attractive village, and Barnes Green has grown.
We've just not building yet.
Barnes Green has
Barnes Green has grown over the years because you've had the Hortons. That was some years ago, but that was obviously a new development. It remains static. Places do change. It will be a change to the character of that. But we're not trying to hide from that. But what we've tried to do is respect the characters. So by providing things like the open space at the front edge, and that setback from the road to provide a new green space that complements the pub and the shop, doesn't try and compete with it.
And what we're hoping is that village green will integrate into Barnes Green. That should become a valuable asset.
You haven't answered my question, which is how is the road widening down Chapel Road and the new pedestrian access points going to retain the authenticity of the current village? Thank you.
That's fine. So at the moment on the plan, is that one on the screen?
Yes. Yeah.
So you can see on the top one or the bottom one where the footways are and the crossings are. The road isn't ours. The road is West Sussex's. It's West Sussex County Council. They're the highway authority. So we can suggest changes to it that meet their design standards. Have a look at, for example, where Monkton Drive comes out of Chapel Road. Slightly, you've got sort of the wooden knee rail fencing. You can do that kind of look to it, but ultimately, we can work with West Sussex County Council, but it's not our work. We're not able to dictate exactly what that looks like, but there's certainly opportunities there to not have that as a complete tarmac build-out. We can certainly have that as, where you can see at the moment, it's kind of got sort of a build-out of a diagonal, which you can certainly plant up those bits, so it's not all just one big tarmac area. We can certainly look at having it so the footway goes through with planters on either side, with grass verges, the wildflowers you've got at the moment.
So you're destroying the hedge?
Yeah, what about the hedge?
Well, the hedge is going, yes.
The hedge is going? Right.
You can't. The village plan, which you wrote, or the parish council wrote, you are not allowed to move any hedgerows. So you wrote that in the village plan, and it's in section 8.1.2. Hedgerows cannot... You have another question, sorry. When you start the building, you've got to connect to services which run along the main road. Mm. Right? So what happens then? Are we using the Hordens as a diversion so that people go down, around and back out again? Because you cannot put a hole in the road and the council have not given permission yet to widen it. They will have no access to your drains, no access delivery to the shop. You've got to connect services. The services are under the road. I say no more.
Just wait a second back, thanks.
Just briefly, obviously, I think as Aidan has already alluded to, there'll be a construction management plan that we need to produce and submit, and will be checked by the district council.
What if the Horsham district council don't allow you to widen that road?
Well, we get. The site access is fundamental to the scheme. If
there's no access, being here tonight, this is a fait accompli. What is having this meeting? It's already been decided, so what is the point of this meeting?
The application is not submitted yet, so it can't be decided.
So if I could just maybe interject just for a moment, because I think it's an important question just to restate. So the reason we, the Parish Council, facilitated this meeting after contact from Miller Developments was to enable a widespread, first of all, presentation from Miller as to what their initial plans are, the status of their plans, and secondly, to give everyone an opportunity to make feedback on those plans, as we are doing, for Miller to take on board as they refine their planning application. And as was pointed out at the beginning,
the route that goes with planning applications, if you've got a bit of land, is that they will prepare a planning application and it will go in to Horsham District Council for consideration, as any other planning application does. It will come and cycle through Parish Council for our own local comments. And as always, with all planning applications, we encourage anyone who has an interest to make comments either directly to the Parish Council through the clerk or to come along to our monthly meetings. So that this is part of the process, and we facilitated that process to enable these gentlemen to come along and represent their case to yourselves and for you to represent your case back to them. If I could just touch on the neighbourhood plan that you referred to, sir, a little earlier. By now most of you will have received your polling cards for the neighbourhood plan. So that plan is not yet made. There's a referendum on the 4th of September. Until that plan's made, if you like, it has limited legal standing. When that plan is made, there are other planning considerations that go on with respect to planning applications versus neighbourhood plans. So having a neighbourhood plan is an important and good thing, but it isn't, if you like, the final point in a planning school, just for clarification. The gentleman there who's had his hand up for an awful long time, Shannon.
Hello. Could you put up on screen a picture of all those houses that you wanted to put up there? Can we enlarge it, please? Or is it possible to enlarge it? The view from the front, so you can see the height of them. Now, look at the angles of those roofs. Those roofs are going to be mighty high. That is domineering, and it's being as the development's at the top of the hill, it's higher. So those roofs are going to be higher still, and that is going to be an eyesore. So it's going to detract from the village.
Yeah, that's helpful feedback, and yeah, that's partly what we're here to hear people's feedback. We have looked carefully at the building heights in the locality. The site itself is probably going to be bound up to bridge height, 7.9 to 8.4 metres in height, which is less than many of the housing developments in the locality.
So what, it's still an eyesore?
Well, that's obviously not our view. I think we've tried to create development and create designs, and the architects look carefully at expanding the area to create development.
It's not your village though, is it?
One of the consultants got involved
is a landscape architect that's carefully looking at landscaping, including tree planting, including like an avenue of protected trees along the site access to help soften the development. We don't want to hide the houses, but the intention is to create a complementary palette of landscaping with the housing alongside it. We maybe go to...
Okay, thanks. We've got one question down here.
Yeah, hi, I'm the owner of the shop. And I was just wondering, how many parking spaces do these houses have? And how many bedrooms do they have? Are they five-bedroom houses, four-bedroom?
Is that...
I can go with the parking first, and then the beds are different sizes. As the scheme, I can't actually get it much closer, I'm afraid. I don't want to give a roaming mic. There we go. So, hope you can hear me. Too loud? Too loud. So, we've got a scheme of about 65 houses here. We have to work to West Sussex's parking standards and their calculator. At the moment, if you count them all up, there are 155 parking spaces. The calculator said we should have 149 parking spaces. So we are over-providing to ensure that there isn't any overspill parking onto the local roads. We can't go much further than that because West Sussex will object if we provide too much car parking. So we've gone for a balance that should ensure that it meets the need, but without creating any overspill onto the local roads.
And then before we moved to the village, we had a five-bedroom house and we had five cars. So where are the people going to park? If they park on the main road, how are people going to get to our shop to buy stuff from our shop?
It's
going to close. The shop will close because we won't get the train. It's as simple as that. If there's no parking for your people that buy these houses, and like you've got two adults who will have two cars, then you have their children, when they pass their tests. If they've got a five-bedroom house, you've got two children, that's four cars in the household.
The majority.
You haven't got enough parking.
The majority. The actual answer I gave for us, we have given the car parking that we're allowed to do, and we've gone over.
I know, but it still doesn't help us, does it?
But it does, because
they'll park on the road.
But I've said we're providing more parking than we actually need to, so it won't be
then you need to, but it's still not enough.
How do you know that?
I live on an estate where we had five bedroom houses, and in the end people are parking all up and down the road, and it turns the road into a one-way street because there's not enough off-road parking for people.
The scheme is designed with parking spaces, carriages, allocated spaces, unallocated spaces, visitor spaces.
So it doesn't matter. What you're saying doesn't matter. It's what actually happens when people move into these houses.
There's insufficient parking.
Insufficient parking everywhere.
They won't do it because they can't sell them anywhere.
I know. And also, about the junction, which is like near enough opposite the shop. It appears to me that you've put that there so that we can say we don't want it there, and you'll go, that's okay, we'll move it. So you're appeasing us, trying to make us feel better because you've moved it slightly. And the other thing I've heard as well is that you'll put your money in and it'll get turned down, but then on appeal you'll get it. That's what I've heard. So why are you even bothering with this? It seems to me like it's a done deal already.
It was a done deal. We want to hear people speak back.
The access is outside the shop because, again, we have to follow West Sussex's standard. We're not allowed to do crossroads at the Haldens. We have to have a certain distance away from the Haldens. We can't do it. Opposite the pubs.
So then people can't park outside the shop because there's a junction there.
But the plan shows, if you want to get back up again, Nick, that every single car that can currently park in that space can continue to park in that space. We're not taking away the ability to park outside the shop. It is crucial for us that can continue. There's nothing we're showing on this plan.
I absolutely agree with Andy. You've only got to go to all the new estates that have been built around here, Southwater, Broadchief. Look at the state of the roads, the cars parked on the pavements, because they're unallocated. Each of these houses are not allocated as parking spaces, and it creates an absolute nightmare. One-way streets, etc. My question is, first and foremost, it comes back to what the lady said at the beginning, really, was what is the mix of houses? Are you one-bedroom houses, two-bedroom houses? Okay, what is the starting point of price on a one-bedroom house?
We can't reveal. That's the market. You can go online and do your research. It's market-led. That's not something to be discussed at a stage of the meeting.
Okay.
There will be a mix of houses. There will be majority two and three bed houses, some four and five bed.
Well, hang on. There'll be one and two bed apartments. One, two, three, four, and five bedroom houses. So it's very important.
So 35%
affordable
houses.
What percentage of two bedroom
houses? The precise mix is still to be finalised, but it will be majority two and three beds, which is what the local need is.
Strategic housing market assessment.
I think the big question that probably everybody wants to ask is what is this actually bringing to the village? I mean, the Sumner's Pond development was agreed in the village plan. The Itchingfield development was agreed in the village plan. It hasn't even been started yet. Okay, what is this going to bring to the village? Because at the moment, my daughter, one bedroom flat, wants to move into a house, cannot afford, even though it's a 25% cashback type deal at Sumner's, cannot afford one of those houses. They both earn a decent wage. So somebody in the village cannot move to a house from a flat because of the price of them. The two-bedroom house is nearly £500,000. It's just unreal. To call that affordable housing is a joke.
You're completely right. The house prices are too high, and that's why the government are pushing a higher number of houses being built to try and help reduce that by increasing the supply and demand.
So, in reality, you're not trying to help people in this village, you're trying to bring new people into the village.
Well, by the sounds of it, it sounds like people like some maybe of your children or grandchildren that want to live in the village and can't afford to. By providing more houses generally, it helps.
There is a question at the back here. We can move on to the new question, Richard.
Yes, it's slightly connected with one of the earlier ones. I'd like to know. With 65 new homes and I think a slightly fancifully low figure of, I think, 244 cars as a notional amount of cars going to move them. What will the impact of that be on road safety, congestion, road surface integrity, propensity to flood, and generally the urbanisation of what is currently a rural village?
So I'll pick up the first bit and Tim come on the second bit. So, we've undertaken a number of traffic surveys on the local roads. We've discussed those with West Sussex Highways Authority in terms of where they should be to make sure that the additional traffic generated by the scheme can be accommodated on the network. We're still undertaking those assessments at the moment to identify whether there are needs for further improvements or traffic calming along those lines. In terms of the integrity of the roads, that is down to West Sussex, as I said, it's their highway, even though they have a responsibility to maintain highway, we can't control that element of it. But certainly it is in their interest to ensure that we're not doing anything to certainly result in a highway safety issue. As I said, we are looking at highway safety, we're an independent safety auditor who's looking at the access and all the proposals as well, and West Sussex will look at that element of it.
With regards to flooding and surface water, historically, there has always been an issue with people building houses and letting them run off unrestricted into local watercourses, building in floodplains. We can't do that anymore. Anything we build, we have to make sure that we are not increasing flood risk elsewhere, and we're not increasing flood risk to developments. And wherever possible, we are helping to improve existing flooding issues. And to get planning permission, we have to prove that we have done all those three things. So we will be dealing with our own surface water runoff. We will be attenuating it on site. We will be installing rainwater harvesting on all properties. So a lot of that rainwater that falls on roofs will be kept and used for use within the houses. At the moment, it's quite a steep site. It's not overly steep, but it's clay. You get a lot of runoff coming off that field straight onto Chapel Road, unrestricted. That runoff will be restricted to something called the 1-in-1-year rate, so a very low rate of runoff for all storm events. No matter how big the storm is, up to the design storm event, it will all be contained within sight and allowed to trickle out into the existing system. If we can't do that, we won't get permission from the League Local Flood Authority. So that is part of the work of opening up the culverts, putting in the subsystem, and all the rainwater harvesting into a whole suite of things to help reduce flooding, not increase flooding.
You talk about opening up the culvert. At the moment, the water drains into the stream and goes through the village. Is that going to increase or decrease?
Ideally, it should remain exactly the same, but we will try to decrease it. Opening up the water course, providing more capacity so more water can be stored within the site,
right,
and that adds slow out so it shouldn't come back out of the gullies.
Because at the moment, the culvert goes under the railway line, which is just beside my garden, is at full capacity several times a year. So anything that increases that water flow, like opening up a culvert, could cause big problems.
So opening up the culvert stops the water spilling out the gullies and running down Chapel Road unrestricted at much quicker rates.
Yes. So at the moment, the pipeline underneath Chapel Road does tend to hold the water back. But if it all goes in straight away, that's when the level comes up, and it comes up, it can rise 3 feet in 10 minutes. I've seen it happen. So that's a really big consideration.
It is, but the last bit of the culvert will remain the same. So the water actually coming out into Munthin Gill will be no more than it is, because we'll be holding all that water back within the site.
Okay, so you're having a pond there or something
it's
like that?
Yeah, it's about the plan. We haven't got any plans because it hasn't been finalised yet, but it is opening up the water course and allowing a much larger area at the front of the site to hold that water for the extreme events.
So we have a question here from this lady.
My question is about sewage. The current sewage plant in this village is at capacity, and the number of overflows has increased in frequency in recent years, and there are no plans apparently to increase the capacity of the current sewage works, which date from 1965 and were last improved in 2012. Now, if we are already experiencing overflows from that sewage plant, I cannot see that it will do anything but get worse when sewage from an additional 65 homes is added to the pressure on that plant. I understand entirely that there will be no surface water added to that, but nevertheless, we are already experiencing
it's completely understandable. We are in discussion with Southern Water. I know Southern Water isn't necessarily everyone's favourite water authority. But again, like with surface water filling, we are not allowed to now, with particularly with the environmental standards and all the issues that everyone's seeing at the moment in terms of spills from water treatment works. We have to show that we are not going to make that situation worse as part of the planning application. So through the discussions with Southern Water and the things we should implement on site, we have to demonstrate that the filling and spills from these the treatment works won't get worse. Part of that is unrestricted surface water entering the foul system. Yeah. So hopefully, again, I have to use hopefully because we haven't done the final modelling and calculations yet. By improving the surface water drainage system, we're supposed to be reducing the amount of surface water going into there. But like I said, we have to demonstrate that to Southern Water and to Natural England to make sure that everyone is. Would that make the situation worse?
It suggests that to me that would be an impossible thing to demonstrate. Yeah. If you add additional houses discharging sewage to an existing over capacity plant, I really find it very hard to imagine how you can demonstrate it won't make that problem worse.
Yes, well, this is a Southern Water issue. But,
yeah, I understand.
Yeah. It's your issue, not Southern Water.
We haven't had a meeting yet, but we've opened up discussions with them and we're having meetings and we should flag all these bits and pieces.
We've had quite a lot of chat about the water management issues, so there's another question at the back here from a lady, if we can move to that.
Hi guys, I want to apologise earlier on for my outburst. I'm neurospicy and nervous, so it tends to come out rather loud and aggressive sometimes. And I understand that this is a very hot topic for everybody and us and you guys are in a very stressful situation at the moment, so apologies for my outburst earlier on. I wanted to ask you about your green infrastructure and biodiversity efforts, how much sort of what you've done on the research side of that, because with the development next door, the front hedgerow, the road hedgerow, is being retained under the LPA because this area is at the edge of a SAC buffer zone, which is a special area of conservation for barber stell bats over at the Mens and Ebono Common. We do have bats here. I love bats. I do bat surveying. It's my day job. It's my night job. I love them. So the whole point of that development being part of that development going ahead was that that hedgerow was retained. The hedgerows here are also historical in nature. So I do envisage that if the LPA to an outturn, then it's a bit ludicrous without swearing, but that hedgerow will probably have to be retained if you're going on what's happened previously and the historical and biodiversity context of the site, because it's a linear feature for navigating the landscape. Have you guys done your research and have you come up with any ideas or methods on how to reduce your impact? Because there is obviously you're the one about taking out, just said earlier, the one about taking out the whole front hedgerow. What your considerations are going forward in terms of what's green infrastructure going to be implemented in terms of street trees with the new green infrastructure policy, and how you intend to enhance the area in a countryside setting rather than a town setting.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to caveat by saying obviously not, no ecologists here tonight, so we can't talk in a technical sense on some of the surveys we've done, but there is an ecologist on the project team or ecology consultancy. They've conducted the majority of their surveys, and that's obviously inputted into the design, such as the buffer to the ancient woodland, 15 metre buffer to the ancient woodland. In terms of the hedgerow at the front, unfortunately, we can't avoid but take it out in order to facilitate the access. We did consider moving it literally just as close to the frontage as possible.
Is it the whole thing
we are looking at that. It is the visibility space for the access are such that unfortunately I think the majority of it is within those visibility space. What we've been looking at instead is looking at potentially providing the hedgerow potentially along the frontage here. You can see where my pointer is going roughly. And you may well already be aware of this, given your background, but one of the requirements now, and we want to do this anyway, but we are required to do it by the new biodiversity net gain regulations, is we have to demonstrate a 10% net gain biodiversity on the site compared to the existing situation. So obviously it's powerful currently. So it's without getting too technical, and as I said, I'm not ecologist myself, but it's essentially a metric that we have to use. It's been developed by Natural England, the ecologists we use. They will look at the existing habitat on site, input the existing habitat, then input what the habitats are that are created on site. So that would be probably a mixture of some wildflower meadows, there'll be some new woodland, wetlands planting as well because of the opening up the culvert, probably. New tree planting. That goes into the metric to provide your net gain requirement.
Do you think with the sensitivity of the site, it would be worthwhile doing a larger, town site, putting more emphasis on the biodiversity net gain and doing more than what is recommended? Because, you know, 10% isn't necessarily that much, and there's already evidence from studies done on the current ENG that it's actually not up to scratch and it's not doing what it's meant to do on it in. So this is my issue. I can see ENG actually being phased out in a year or two because it's not, there is divisive criticism and opinions on whether it is being effective, and again whether it is being effective is down to who's doing it, and it's not just the work you do at that moment in time, it's the aftercare 10, 20 years on. So obviously, like the tree work, the big clearings has Broadbridge Heath development, you've got mature oak trees there that are in stress, and they are now showing that a good 5, 6, 7 years after the burn has happened, because that's how trees react.
And I think that's a really good point. We'll take those comments on board, actually, it's reconstructive. We'll not just try to do the minimum. It's also worth mentioning we are doing other surveys as well, so, you know, dormice.
I've seen, might want to have somebody replace them because they're all facing
downwards,
so the dormice aren't going to be able to
nest
in them.
You can take that away and mention that.
That's really helpful, yeah. Thank you. Really? Thank you.
Hi, sorry. I work at the shop, and I was just wondering, because you're saying you're putting bits into stormwater flooding. How do you know how much water you need to hold?
So we use the flood estimation handbook, which is basically works out on catchment areas. We work out what the average annual rainfall is, we work on recorded rainfall in the area for the past 5 to 10 years, and that enables us to work out what our peak flow rate is and how much water is coming down a certain area, and that tells us what the volume is that we need
to. So what is the volume that you're going to hold?
I can't say off the top of my head. I'm sorry about that.
But we can take it away, and we can feed that back on.
Yes.
It, not here, but we can, after this meeting.
Many times having to drain
water
out of it.
And this is what we're trying to help with.
How much we flood.
Yes, no, I understand that flooding is a, a big issue, not just here, but everyone. It affects everybody.
Can I suggest maybe two more questions?
Yeah, can I ask a quick one? Sorry. Why is that the picture? You can show the hedge in the picture if you are taking the hedge out.
This is an earlier plan. It is a draft plan. The plan will be different by the time we submit. Unfortunately, since this plan produced, we have.
So you've got another plan, but you're not showing us another plan before?
Well, we haven't got it to the stage where we can.
This is very early in the process. Yeah.
So again, just for clarity, there's
not
working.
Just for clarity,
this is sort of a meeting and a discussion and input ahead of a planning application going in. So of necessity. At this stage, there are going to be details that won't be represented here, and that's what these folk are working on. And as we mentioned earlier, with any planning application, that goes through a number of stages, which include coming to the parish council, where we try to consolidate all of the great input that we get from the village and put some rationale on that to feed back to Horsham District Council, who then take that into account with their own requirements and West Sussex's requirements from a highways perspective. It's talking, that's what we're doing, it's communicating, yeah. So, I mean, the point is, it's good to make get these points aired, because these guys can then go away and take them and work them. And then they will come back as part of the planning application, and you will have a chance to review it. And make inputs as part of the planning application process. That's the way the system works. So, just on that, we have a question from this gentleman here, and then I think, Nick, you were thinking maybe another couple of questions, and I'd emphasise it would be good to try and touch on if there are some different subjects to touch on in the meeting. So, not water neutrality again, or other things, okay? So this gentleman first, and then two more different questions.
So this question is, my name's Chris. I've lived in the village for 17 years, and I've seen lots of changes in all that time, including increased road traffic based on construction. I hear you mention a construction management plan. If we had the opportunity to review during the planning process your planning application, it's very important to local people that we don't have a ridiculous number of construction lorries, that we don't have construction workers parking in places that inconvenience the village, we don't have noise for the duration of the building works and all of those bad things. So my question, because I've never actually been involved in a planning application objection, and there will be an objection, of course, is the construction management plan part of what the public consultation includes at the time of submission, and can your planning application actually be turned down as a result of objections raised by the against that that construction management plan?
Really good question, really important. What you find often actually is some developers that they'll submit the construction environmental management plan after the planning consent has been granted. What we plan to do is provide that certainty and submit that with the planning application up front. That offers you an opportunity to comment on the measures that we set out within that during the course of the application, amongst other issues that you raise. And rightly so, that includes measures such as noise prevention measures, the routing of traffic. It's not just the immediate vicinity, but also the wider road network, so ensuring that they're on the A road network as much as possible. Dust prevention measures, as I said, really important with noise. Construction working hours, etc. But also, we're particularly mindful of the local village shop, and pub, and ensuring that no vehicles are parking on that road. So it'll be
setting out the measures that we'll be looking to do to prevent that from happening on site. Should there be any breaches of that construction environmental management plan, should it get approved, and you obviously have the opportunity to comment on that, then because it would form part of the planning application, if we do not adhere to the measures set out within that document, then complaints such as yourself, if there are issues that we're causing, which we really, really are mindful of, we do not want to do, but if that is the case, then enforcement action can take place. And I've seen, not ourselves actually to be fair, but other developers where they have had to shut down sites until they get those measures up and running as they should do as per the management plan. I think it's a really, really important point, and that is why we're not just kicking it down the road, we will submit that with the planning application. So thank you for that question.
Barry, can I have one more? You as a construction company, have you ever come across, you're halfway through the build and it's not selling, do you stop and carry on later on?
In my personal experience, and you know, talking 15 years plus, I haven't actually encountered that myself, and that includes also, you know, recessions during extremely tough times, even during COVID. You know, obviously we're at home, but we were out as much as we could, and we haven't had to shut down sites. So if this were to go through, we are fully committed. And also, you know, we can look at the triggers so that, you know, we talk about the Village Green. That's what, from our perspective anyway, brings the scheme to life. And we can look at bringing that forward sooner rather than later, rather than being something that's delivered later on in the build programme. And then people can actually see the benefits of, in terms of our vision anyway, from you know, an earlier stage than, you know, necessarily being further down the line. And hopefully that will also add value, but not just to us, you know, in terms of, as you're saying, selling, but actually to the village from an earlier time when it's delivered.
How big is that green?
What we'll do is we can confirm that after, if you don't mind, with the parish, but we'll provide a figure, because as we say, there's a bit of pushing and pulling in terms of the you know, for example, the ditch and the proposal, so we're hoping to
just one at a time. Two more questions?
Yeah.
So this gentleman here had a question on a different subject.
Hi. Nice to meet you. I'd just like to ask about a point you made earlier about the actual need for new houses. I think that's a fundamental issue. My first degree was in economics and resource allocation. So I'd like to understand when you were talking about, and you were very clear in your comment, that I disagree with there isn't a need for new houses. It depends how you look at it, but upon what actual basis for this particular area within the general context are you actually referring to? I'd just like to understand it from an economic point of view. There are lots of related issues, affordable housing, and you could go on forever about this issue, and it's related to a lot of different things. But I'd just like to understand, why do you feel, apart from obviously an economic interest in building houses, because that's obviously inherent within you as a business, it's what you do. But I'd like to understand exactly why you feel, and upon what that is pinned upon, i.e. the evidence behind it, why do you feel there is a need for new houses? Apart from the issue of sustainable housing and affordability and multipliers and everything contained within that, why particularly are you so certain that there is a pressing need for houses within the village, given that the actual average cost of house will be way above what many people setting off can afford in terms of the multipliers? I'd just like to understand it, and thank you.
It's completely right that it is a complex housing need. In terms of how the housing need in Horsham, and its housing need is set within a district area, Horsham District Council have provided a housing need figure by government, and that's via a calculation which is based on, broadly speaking, the affordability ratio. So in Horsham, it's over 11 times your average income in Horsham, is you need that in order to purchase a house. That makes sense.
Yeah.
There's also factors into that, an affordability ratio as well, and also then that is then looking in terms of population growth and household growth as well.
So they're suggesting that your building here is going to push the prices down.
They're the kind of factors that factor into the figure that is provided to Horsham. And then Horsham, they have to demonstrate that they have a supply of housing to show that they can demonstrate they've got delivery for 5 years, the next 5 years. At the moment, they can only demonstrate that they've got 1 year's supply of housing going forward. So they've got...
It's one of the worst
it's one of
in the whole country,
in the area.
That's based on certain assumptions, though, isn't it?
It is, but those assumptions are assumptions that the government have told the district council are the assumptions they should be based on the housing need on, which in turn is why there is a need in terms of when you're considering planning applications for housing.
Yeah.
Obviously, a number of people have expressed scepticism about the actual affordability in real terms. And you know, as Aidan has said, it is market driven, the price of housing. But ultimately, if there are more houses to go around, that does help stabilise and in time reduce the house. The price of housing.
However, it's based on the argument of economies of scale. And economies of scale apply to many aspects of industry. But with houses, it doesn't quite work that way. In terms of economics, you're looking at demand and supply. If you build more houses, the sort of assumption, ceteris paribus, other things remain equal, is that things will be lower in price. But housing is a bit like a Veblen good in economics. Are you familiar with that?
No.
Okay. It's basically, it's something that people will put more store or value into. Therefore, they will assign a greater proportion of their disposable income into that particular thing. The problem is, as the average goes up and places become more and more expensive, economies of scale don't really apply, because you're looking at building more houses to therefore reduce the actual unit average value of house. So hopefully it will come down. But it doesn't do that with houses, because houses have always, apart from recession, they've always increased in value. Why are they the thing that people put more money into in terms of investment? Because they will increase in value. So to say that you build more houses, therefore it becomes more affordable, because more people have a stock from which to buy, is an erroneous assumption, because it doesn't actually reduce the unit costs of those houses. From a village point of view, if you're looking at trying to, and we've bought and sold houses in various places, I'll keep it short. But the point is, if you are building X number of houses and you're expecting to increase the housing stock with the average price coming down, it doesn't work that way. So, and you know that to be the case. That's just basically it's basic economics.
I think the economic points are well made and well represented by yourself. I'm not sure we're going to be able to solve the country's economic and housing.
No, I just want to understand why you say that there is a particular need in this particular area for new houses.
This is ultimately also that's a need, and we just want that.
So just to be fair to everyone around me, two more people that have different questions, if that's okay.
Yeah, last two questions.
Last two.
Sorry, quick one.
No, just two more.
Yes, houses have been sold to foreign investors. My point, both unscored, although they sold to Chinese people from Hong Kong, and they're empty because they're buying them for investing. So how is the foreigners buying the houses for investment going to reduce the house pricing around here for our kids to buy when we can't buy them in the best place?
Can I please ask a very general question? As you've studied the Barnsley Village Plan, how a lot of work, an awful lot of time and thought went into that plan. How do you reconcile your proposals with the emerging Barnsley Village Plan?
Thank you.
So it's been a factor in terms of how we've been developing our, because we know we're not a site allocated in the neighbourhood plan that's emerging. I think it's going to referendum in September. But alongside that, Horsham District Council have also been developing their own plan, and our site is a draft allocation in their district plan.
Well, we've got as far as Horsham agreeing to the Barnes Green plan. That's why it's going to a referendum. It was entirely clear from that plan that people in the village value the unique nature of the village, of coming out of the village pub, of coming out of the village shop and having the countryside across the road from it. Why are you...
One more question. So,
wait one second.
Okay. So the lady had a very different question on a buffer zone. So if I could beg your indulgence on the panel, it's one quick, very different question on the buffer zone. One last, and then we'll close.
That's right. Can I ask a question?
I think it was more of a state than a trust.
No, to what extent did you consider the and the economy of the area?
Alongside the other, the district plan that Horsham produced, they work together, they're not exclusive.
Horsham have done. Our views don't matter at all, we're not concerned about our consultation.
Can anybody tell me how many houses of Horsham District Council asked us in the green that the Barnes Green to build? Because on the village plan it says 61. There's 20 going up at the old school, that leaves 41. They're planning to put an extra 65. Do we have to have 65 or do we have to have 41? Can anybody tell me?
Is there one more question?
Is it not that any of the Barnes Council answer, please?
Hi there. Sorry, I'm going to believe you for this. So, firstly, a couple of points. We were obviously all disappointed with Horsham District Council proposing a green piece of land when we put forward a brownfield site. That's just a statement. Second thing, Miller Development, I believe, owns the land, yeah? They're a 12-man company, is that correct? Who flipped land and made 25% profit, £1.4 million per employee last year. So if you're wondering about cheaper houses, there's a place to look, okay? You also acquired the land next door, which we haven't mentioned tonight. Or you have options to do it, or you have plans to do it. That should be taken into the calculation. On what could happen to road, drainage and everything else. Finally, I understand your plans. I appreciate what you're trying to do to enhance the village without being at the front. I understand the pressing need on drainage is causing you to have green area. The access road probably needs to be enhanced and moved somewhere else. And you have opportunity to do something special for that piece of green room. We're obviously of the opinion that eventually you're going to push it through. So what we need to be able to tell us is how you can enhance the village with that, with the environment, and what your plans are for that north as well. As
thank you for your question, for your comments as well. Just want to be clear, I am here on behalf of Miller Homes. So we deliver the scheme. I don't have any bearing with Miller Developments whatsoever. They're the landowner. So we're basically working with them to bring the site forward. They don't build houses. We build houses, but it's very common for sites to come forward through promoters, etc. But I can't comment on their business model or what have you. If you look us up, we're Miller Homes. You can see our reputation as a 5-star house builder. Very good reputation for that matter, and I hope that will give you some confidence anyway on that front. I concur with what you're saying in terms of creating some expression. I reiterate what I said earlier, that's exactly along the lines.
of what we're trying to create. This is, as I said as well earlier, the point of listening to yourselves very kindly. It's a Friday night, maybe rather there's better places to be. We're going to take on board your feedback, and let's see, you know, in terms of, in regards to our submission, at least we've gone somewhere to meeting some of those concerns, and that won't be the start of it. You know, we can maintain that dialogue going forward.
So thanks for that. I think we've now had two questions, but the lady there did have a question about the buffer zone, the lady with the microphone.
Yes, I just wanted to ask why there isn't a buffer zone next to Smuggler's Lane, which is an ancient right of way.
So the ancient woodland designation is a specific designation where National England set out buffers that are required. The trackway to the north hasn't got that same designation, doesn't have the same requirements for buffers. There's still consideration, careful consideration in terms of the ecology of that hedgerow and making sure that lighting and things like that, because obviously, you know, the survey showed that the site is, I think, used by bats and other.
So I think I'd like to, we probably need to draw this meeting to a close. I'd like to, first of all, thank our guests this evening for coming and giving their presentation and listening to the feedback and trying to answer as best they can. I'd like to thank everyone from the village who's come along and for all of the interesting, insightful questions that have been asked. This is a stage in the process. As we go forward, if you have any further questions, please don't hesitate to get in touch with the parish council to make your own views known as part of the process, or indeed back to the developers. That's what the whole process is about.
Sorry, can I just ask? You said it was being recorded. How do we access the audio recording?
So the recording will be keeping hold of. If you need to make an access to that, you need to make a request to the parish council.
Okay, it says there's lots of people
here that
could
be coming
tonight.
Yeah, so.
Yeah,
so if there's a desire to listen to the audio recording, then you need to request it through the parish council. Okay, so with that, I'd like to once again thank our guests and everyone who's come along, and we'll close the meeting now. But please don't hesitate to get in touch with the parish council if you've got anything else you'd like to answer.